This is Audible.
Mainframe presents Read On by Brandon Sanderson and Jancy Patterson. Narrated by Susie Jackson. For Kenton Olds, who makes me laugh every day. JP. Chapter 1. I stood at the edge of a balcony on one of the branches of the stadium tree, watching the games play out in the enormous hollow below. This particular tree had been chosen for its shape, branches reaching out horizontally and then curving up and inward like the sides of a massive vase, large enough that the spectators on the far side appeared to be nothing more than rows of rippling dots. 12 ships soared across the widest part of the hollow, 6 painted Independence blue, and the remaining in Unity yellow. Dim light filtered through the red and purple miasma in the sky above the canopy, and enormous spotlights hung on cables from the branches above, illuminating the ships jetting about. Above the spotlights, just beneath the huge, sweeping branches, a hologram enlarged the skirmish, and I watched as one of the Independence ships broke away from the pack, dodging a barrage of laser fire, and slipped through the hoop marking the goal. Cheers rang through the stadium, and the mining corps that sponsored this match lit off a round of fireworks in Independence blue. With 3 goals so far, the Independence team was winning. At least we were winning at something. Beside me, Rinna Keen, my advisor in the Cytonic training program, half-heartedly waved an Independence pennant, a twig with a blue fabric leaf attached at the top. While most in the stadium wore garments of yellow or blue, Rinna Keen dressed entirely in black, though at least his jacket had a bluish sheen. He was taller than me, and his skin had a slightly rosier tint to it, both traits which indicated his ancestors came from Reaching Tree. In the days before ship travel, the denizens of each tree only intermixed when the trees bumped into each other across the miasma. Now that Rinna Keen had lost his council seat in the wave of Unity appointments, we were more or less equals, him as the leader of the Independence Party, and me as a Cytonic. That felt strange. He was many seasons older than me, and much wiser, and yet, here we were, now essentially the same status, even if I didn't have his experience.
"It is good to have you home, Alanik,"
Rinna Keen said.
"I was worried about you."
"It is good to be home," I said, "even if it means I failed."
"Many of our people have failed between these branches,"
Rinna Keen said. That was true. I remembered a time when failing in the games had felt like a tragedy. The stakes here were personal. Members of the winning teams of even the Junior League championships could expect to secure top spots as transit and cargo pilots, or appointments to the Air Force. Not that Read On had seen actual combat for generations. I'd skipped over all that when my Cytonic powers had manifested. I'd jumped from the Junior Leagues straight to the upper echelons of the Fighting Corps. As one of only 5 living Urdale Cytonics and the only capable teleporter, I was theoretically invaluable to my people's survival. Not that I'd done them much good during my last mission. I sighed, leaning back against the wooden seat carved into the branch of the tree. The island trees floated in the miasma of Read On, their roots planted in large chunks of naturally occurring acclivity stone. The trees grew thick layers of bark, deep enough that entire rooms could be excavated beneath its surface without reaching the living parts of the tree near the base of the branches. Here, higher in the branches, one might be able to reach new wood by digging in 6 feet or so, plenty of room to carve smaller structures without harming the tree. This balcony and all of its seating had been meticulously carved into the bark, making it a part of the huge living stadium. It was good to be back beneath the familiar branches, but I was supposed to bring back the secret to hyperdrive technology, I said. Instead, I gave the opportunity to the humans. They'll try to make peace with superiority, make the same mistakes we have made.
Perhaps, Rinnakeen said. I'm more concerned that we will make the same mistakes we have made.
Given the number of yellow pennants flying in the stadium, the fear was reasonable.
Besides, we have information now, Rinnakeen said. Not the information you left to retrieve, but important information all the same.
Much less important in my mind. But Rinnakeen had a point. Many of my people believed the humans had been exterminated for their refusal to capitulate, for their stubborn insistence on fighting for freedom instead of assimilating into the superiority. Humans were a cautionary tale, a justification for the appeasement policies that gave the superiority more and more control over Redon. If it became known that the humans were alive, that they had somehow managed to resist all this time, indeed, that they were beginning to break free from the superiority's forced imprisonment, it would be a huge blow to the unity movement, a weakness I hoped we could exploit to drag some kind of success from my failure. Which was why I wanted to keep the information from unity for as long as possible. We needed to figure out how to use it before they did. Below, the teams lined up for another bout. As per the rules, the Unity team would now appoint a stringer, the ship whose job it was to cut across the battlefield and make it to the opposing team's hoop without getting tagged by the lasers. Each pilot had to take a turn as a stringer until everyone had had a turn, or until the other team could no longer catch up in points. A team couldn't rely on one strong player. The tree was only as healthy as its weakest branch. Unity selected their stringer, Havakal, one of their strongest offensive players. Independence had started with their best players in the hopes of building momentum. It was easier to perform at your best when you already felt like you were winning. Unity had saved their better players for last. They're hoping to prey on our overconfidence, I said, but the Independence team will know that's what they're doing.
Yes, Rinnakeen said. But it may still work.
I looked around at the cloud of blue and yellow pennants waved by the thousands of spectators gathered on their balconies. The colors were about even, which should have been a comfort, but they hadn't been even in the council balancing, when Unity swept the council seats, demolishing the Independence majority. I'd been gone for 19 sleep cycles, missing the balancing entirely. I'd left hoping to discover the secret that would free my people from superiority control. If I had succeeded and returned before the balancing, the wind might have swept in our favor. But I'd returned with nothing, only to find us closer to bondage than ever. I glanced over at Rinnakeen. He'd intimidated me at first, but though he expected a lot of me, he was never discouraging, only intense. In fact, there was an intensity about him even when he was relaxed. Rinnakeen wasn't a Cytonic himself, though he'd mentored most of the Urdale Cytonics as we'd come into our powers. The other Cytonics were all working with Unity now, and because the superiority designated us as dangerous, they'd agreed to use their Cytonic abilities only under Council supervision. We were dangerous to the superiority, I would give them that. Rinnakeen kept his focus on the hologram above. I'd attended games with him before, but when I'd been in training, there had always been some lesson I was meant to learn, some larger goal. Today, we were here to keep up appearances, prove I wasn't hiding from the council and their questions since my return 4 sleep cycles before, even though I was. The private balcony did afford us an opportunity to talk out of earshot of others. That was a luxury on the populous trees of Redon. At least people are still flying our flag, I grumbled.
Yes, Rinnakeen said, but most of them have forgotten this is more than a sport.
They remembered when they cast lots in the last council balancing.
That too is a sport, Rinnikin said. They vote for their team, and some switch sides when their current team is losing.
He was right, depressing as that was. Even most of my own family had switched sides in the balancing, voting for unity instead of independence. But that doesn't make any sense. If enough people change their votes, it causes the other team to lose. Rinnikin's bone ridges arched.
That's politics, he said.
It shouldn't be. The decisions of the council determined everything, and when the balance of representatives shifted, so did the policies. The current council was a unity majority, with only a few independence delegates remaining. So unity chose the delegates who negotiated trade agreements with the superiority. The superiority set the terms, of course. The superiority always set the terms. But at least when the independents were in control of the council, they didn't grovel at the feet of the superiority, hoping to be treated like favored pets. Unity scored, and the hologram switched to a series of messages from sponsors, a transportation company showing off the interior of their new luxury ships, and the vineyards on string with a new limited juice flavor they hoped we would try. At the end of the endorsements, a familiar face dominated the air at the center of the branches. Nana Lys, new council president and Unity High Chancellor. Her booming voice addressed the crowd from the speakers built into the floors of the balconies.
Greetings, citizens of Redawn, Nana Lys said, her voice proud and confident.
What is this? I muttered to Rinnikin. Unity is taking out endorsements now? That's not allowed, is it?
They're supposed to give us equal time, Rinnikin said. But the council recently decided to waive that requirement, so long as the message isn't overtly political.
I wasn't sure Nana Lys was capable of a message that wasn't overtly political. She continued to speak. No doubt this message was pre-recorded. Many council members attended the games to see and be seen, but the council president was often too busy. Nana Lys thanked the pilots for their hard work and preparation.
You represent the best of us, and it is because of you that our future is bright.
I supposed it wasn't out of line for the council president to congratulate athletes. But then she went on.
We call ourselves Unity and Independence, but we all enjoy the benefits of both freedom and peace. The real enemies are those who seek to divide Redawn, who threaten our peace, who put the prosperity of all denizens in jeopardy.
Unity was always calling us divisive for disagreeing, as if they weren't doing the same by disagreeing with us. But of course, as they like to say, the opposite of division was unity, as if their choice of a name left us no other option but to fall in line with them. She called us the enemy, I said. How exactly is that apolitical?
That's why I argued against this in the last session, Rinnikin said. Who is to determine what is overt and what is not?
As Nana Lys made her final remarks, pennants waved all around the stadium, both blue and yellow. Everyone seemed to agree with her, independence and unity alike. Everyone but us.
Progress for Redawn, Nana Lys declared. May her enemies be swiftly silenced for the good of us all.
Hairs rose on the back of my neck as voices sang out from all around the stadium, joining in a great rumbling chorus. They were cheering for pretty words that would destroy us. Progress for Redawn. It was what we all wanted, of course. But some of us thought it mattered what we were progressing toward. I knew which enemies she meant to swiftly silence. I didn't realize the miasma had gotten so thick, I said. Rinnikin stared up at the hologram, which had cut away to feature the ships as they lined up for their next bout.
The wind has shifted, Rinnikin said. I fear it grows more toxic all the time.
The ships flew across the field for the next bout, but all I could see were the waving blue pennants, each one representing a person who should have been ready to fight for our planet, for our home, but was instead allied with Unity, who wanted to give it all away.
I think we should leave the match now, Rinnakeen said. I don't know how many will believe we are the enemy, but I would rather not be caught in the crowd.
Cheers went up again, and yellow fireworks filled the air. Unity was gaining on us now. I didn't want to watch the match turn on us. Yes, I said, let's go. We stepped onto the stairs that wound down the branch, passing more private balconies and some larger ones crammed with families, children riding on parents' shoulders, waving yellow flags. When we reached a crook in the branch, we followed it down the stairs to the platforms around the trunk, descending beneath the playing field to Rinnakeen's small transport ship, made of dark metal mined from the core of the planet. I was still bitter about the loss of my own ship, which had been effectively stolen by the humans. I'd put in a request for another, but the order was taking time to process. Normally, I would have been granted one instantly due to my status as a Cytonic, but the Unity officials must have wanted something to hold over my head until I told them where I'd been and what I'd learned while I was gone. By law, they couldn't force me. I would have been happy to report to the previous council, but now I would be facing a room full of Unity officials with very few friendly faces. I guessed they were growing tired of me putting them off. I climbed into the co-pilot seat, preferring to sit beside Rinnakeen rather than on the cushier seats behind us. Rinnakeen flew us away from the stadium tree through the purple and red swirls of gas in the miasma. Somewhere far below us was the core of the planet, noxious and uninhabitable, visited only by the mining corps in heavy protective gear. We were in a day cycle, and still a few sleep cycles away from the fall of night, so the ambient light was fairly bright. We flew into the atmospheric bubble of industry, one of the largest of the trees, which housed nearly a quarter of the population of Redon. The branches of industry reached horizontally away from the trunk of the tree in all directions, and towers stretched into the space above them, while shorter buildings suspended downward from beneath. Several kilometers from the trunk, the branches reached for the sky, with structures built in spiral patterns winding up the branches all the way to the tips. The air was thinner here, as the tree processed the toxins out of the atmosphere and produced the oxygen we needed to breathe. A voice reached into my mind, unbidden, though I wished I could ignore it.
Alanik, it said. You and Rinnakeen left the match before I could speak to you. We would like to meet with you in the council chambers immediately. What is it?
Rinnakeen asked. Quillan, I said. He was one of the Unity Cytonics, the closest to my age, though he was a few seasons older. He wants us to meet him at the council tree. If he'd noticed we'd left the stadium early, he'd been watching us, probably planning to move on us in the stadium, where it would be harder for us to refuse an escort, where, if we resisted, they could accuse us of making a scene, turn public opinion against us, as if the wind wasn't already blowing that way. Chapter 2. I'm not going to meet with them on their terms, I said. I could hyperjump from almost anywhere on Redon, but the council tree, the capital of Redon, was home to the other four Cytonics. Working together, they could create a Cytonic inhibitor, a field from which I'd be unable to escape. They could all come to me, of course, but it would be much easier for them to catch me if I agreed to walk right into their jaws.
Offer to meet them in a neutral location, Rinnakeen said.
I don't want to, I said, too much risk. They'll bring the other Cytonics. Rinnakeen pressed his lips together. I was right, and he knew it.
Alanik, Quillan said. Please respond.
I will not be meeting with the council at this time, I answered. I will let you know when I am next available.
I'm sorry, Alanik, Quillan said, but your attendance is required.
He's not asking, I said. He wants us to believe we don't have a choice. though of course we did. As long as we could escape from them, we would always have a choice. To believe otherwise was to hand over our own power, the way they wanted to hand Redawn over to the superiority.
Soon we may not,
Rinnakeen said.
The council voted to consolidate the military. Many of the independence bases are already submitting to the council's control.
I stared at him. Redawn had maintained two air forces since the end of the last war. We competed and drilled against each other, with the understanding that if Redawn faced a common threat, we would work together to fight it. The division kept us sharp, each side trying to maintain an edge against the other. They're getting ready to move against us, I said.
Yes,
Rinnakeen said.
And they're doing it in the name of peace.
There hadn't been real fighting on Redawn in almost a century, and both Unity and the Superiority promised peace and cooperation. Never mind that the Superiority had kept us contained here all this time, punishing us for rebellion. Never mind that if we accepted their peace, we also had to accept their control over every aspect of our technology, our travel, our behavior, our culture. They'd already made us paupers, withholding advanced technology from us because we rejected their rule. Now they would make us beggars as well, stripping us of our dignity and our heritage in the process. And so many of my people accepted it. A prisoner could be convinced that they lived in a paradise, if the prison was pretty enough. Is there anyone left who will fight with us?
The base on Hollow refused to unify,
Rinnakeen said.
I sent my daughter and her family there, but I'm afraid they won't be able to hold out long.
My brother, Gilof, was stationed at Hollow. He and his flightmates helped supervise the lumber work there. Unlike the rest of my family, Gilof wasn't going to swallow Unity lies. If the other independence bases see that there are holdouts, maybe they'll reverse course, I said.
That is my hope, but I expect Unity will mobilize their forces quickly to bring them in line.
It was hard to imagine my people firing on each other, but Unity always seemed more willing to strike out at us than at the superiority. How can they do that and claim it's for peace? I asked. Rinnakeen didn't answer that question. I already knew the answer anyway. It was easier to believe the story they were told than to awaken to the reality of our oppression.
What we need, Rinnakeen said, are some allies who have not forgotten that we are at war.
I tapped my sharp nails on the dashboard of the ship. I know, I said. When Rinnakeen originally suggested that I answer the call to join the superiority military, I'd been excited. Finally, something I could do. All anyone on Redawn ever seemed to want to do was talk. Even though I hadn't made it to the tryouts, discovering that our old human allies were still alive and fighting should have been a victory. But then, those former allies kept me unconscious for weeks, woke me only when they needed something, and then treated me like a prisoner. Still, I remembered the desperation of the woman who spoke to me first.
They want my people dead. We need your help.
She, at least, seemed to understand the gravity of the situation. And the other one, Jorgen, the male cytonic. He was clearly untrained, to the point that he didn't know how to communicate properly. But I did get a bit of emotion from him through his cytonic resonance, enough to know he wasn't happy with the direction things were going. He was scared. But at least the humans knew what it was like to fight back. The humans are facing the same problem we are, I said. Their leaders are looking for a way to end the war. If we appeal to them for help, they could side with Unity.
I don't think that will happen, Rinnakeen said. The council has received a directive from the superiority. There's someone new in charge, apparently, and they're demanding we turn over the humans we're harboring.
I stared at Rinnakeen. We're not harboring humans, are we?
No, Rinnakeen said. But a human took your place and infiltrated the superiority. How are the superiority to assume that happened?
by the branches. They think I was working with the humans.
They think we are working with the humans,
Rinnakeen said.
And now they've issued an ultimatum. Turn over the fugitives,
or they will very politely destroy us, I said. Which isn't aggressive at all, I'm sure.
They'll justify it,
Rinnakeen said. They justified everything. And more than half of my people would parrot the justification as if it made sense, simply because the superiority said it. You think I should return to the humans and ask for help? In hindsight, I should have stayed longer, tried harder to discern their true intentions. But I'd been disoriented, alarmed at how long I'd been unconscious, how much I might have missed. And I really did not like that nasty government woman. I'd thought the myth of human aggression was propaganda spread by the superiority. Now I wasn't so sure. And if they were as aggressive as the superiority said, they could be good allies to have right now. They could also be twice as dangerous if they turned against us.
The superiority controls us by dividing us,
Rinnakeen said.
That's why they wanted us to think the humans were eradicated. They're afraid of what we can do together.
That sounded like a unity argument, but I saw his point. From what little I'd seen, we had more knowledge of cytonics and politics, while the humans had real fighting experience, something no one on Redon had anymore. I don't know how strong the human military force is, I said, or how many ships they might be willing to send our way, if any. My last meeting with them had gone poorly. I hadn't endeared myself to their leadership, nor them to me.
Then perhaps they would take us in as refugees,
Rinnakeen said.
Then we could begin to build a resistance from their planet, the way they once mounted a resistance from ours.
He glanced over at me.
If the humans joined us, it might grant us the most important resource, hope.
I didn't like relying on flighty emotions, but Rinnakeen was right. The humans might be our best option. They might be our only option.
Or we could use your knowledge of the humans to buy us time,
Rinnakeen said.
If we seem like we're cooperating, unity might leave us alone a while longer.
He didn't sound any more excited about that prospect than I was. If we give the superiority what they want, we're playing right into their hands.
Yes, but the superiority might not be our most pressing concern.
I don't want to tell Unity I found humans, I said. We should be using that information to discredit them.
I agree,
Rinnakeen said.
That's why I think you should return and ask the humans for help, while I go to the council and try to reason with them.
They won't see reason, I said.
They might,
Rinnakeen said.
Most of Unity's supporters are blowing their way because they don't see any other choice. If you bring the humans to our aid, you give them another option, another path. Remind the humans of our old alliance and our potential as current allies. If you succeed, someone is going to have to advocate for that option with the council. Will it be you?
I sighed. We both knew I wasn't a diplomat. Rinnakeen wasn't a council member anymore, but he was the High Chancellor of the Independents. The members of the council listened to him, those left on our side, at least. Still, you can't cooperate with them, I said. That is their way.
Cooperation is not evil, Alanik,
Rinnakeen said.
It depends entirely upon what you are cooperating with.
It's evil to cooperate with them, I insisted. They want to work with our oppressors.
We all want the same thing,
Rinnakeen said. Peace for
Redon.
But the way they're going about it is wrong.
It is. And someone has to continue to tell them that, so they can't forget there's another way.
Rinnakeen exited Industry's airspace and turned towards Spindle, a smaller tree where we both made our home. An alert flashed on the panel. The color indicated that we were ordered to stop at the nearest landing bay for inspection by a government vehicle. Normally, this alert was used for traffic violations, though we were flying at regulation speed through open airspace.
Alanik, Quillan said in my head. We've come to escort you to the council chambers. Please ground your ship.
I dug my nails into the plush armrest. It's Quillan, I said. He wasn't a teleporter, but he did have access to cytonic skills I hadn't yet been able to access, including concussion bolts and mind blades. Last I knew, he wasn't strong enough to use the mind blades effectively, making him as dangerous to himself as he was to others. He wants us to land so he can escort me to the council.
You can flee to Hollow, Rinnikeen said, but they'll come for you there, and you won't have enough people to defend yourselves. We simply don't have enough pilots to resist them.
Rinnikeen turned the ship toward the nearest landing bay, a loading dock for one of the lumber yards. We cruised over a lot filled with old bark that had been stripped away. It would be turned into remanufactured wood in a pressing facility nearby and used for buildings that couldn't be hollowed from the branches. The ship following us pulled up over our left wing, escorting us down into the landing bay. Rinnikeen turned off his boosters and lowered his altitude lever, bringing us down onto the smooth, shaved wooden surface. As he did, Quillan's voice reached into my mind again.
I'm here in peace, he said. This doesn't have to get aggressive.
I dug my nails harder into the armrest. His words made me want to scream. There was nothing quite so frustrating as soft words being wielded like clubs. At least a straightforward attack was honest. Everyone could see it for what it was. Later, when the council discussed this, Quillan would testify that he was perfectly docile and reasonable, and I was going to look like the problem. My fingers pierced through the armrest. I was going to owe Rinnikeen for repairs, but I wasn't sorry. It felt good. If that made me aggressive, so be it. I don't like leaving you here, I said. You could come with me.
Our branches fork here, Rinnikeen said, but we're still connected at the root.
Pretty words that meant there was no convincing him otherwise. I reached across the negative realm, searching for that strange planet, the rock with the eerie, clear atmosphere, surrounded by orbital platforms and a thick layer of debris. I found it, but as I tried to form the coordinates in my mind, the surface of the planet felt slippery, empty, blank. They had a cytonic inhibitor. When had that happened? That hadn't been there when I'd left them. I didn't think they had enough cytonics or enough knowledge to form one. This was probably more similar to the ones used by the Superiority, especially because it seemed to cover the entire planet. I scanned over the area, searching for a gap, but I found none. Instead, I sensed a mind hovering in their atmosphere. Jorgen. His abilities were still active, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to find him. Superiority cytonic inhibitors operated with a key, a set of impressions that allowed a cytonic to bypass the inhibitor. That made the inhibitors particularly nasty, neutralizing all cytonics except for those the Superiority sanctioned. I didn't imagine the Superiority had handed the humans one. They must have somehow found one on their own. At least I could speak to Jorgen, even if I couldn't hyperjump to his location. Rinnikeen released the ship doors and stepped out with his hands held clearly in front of him.
Quillan, Rinnikeen said. Thank you for escorting me. I was going home to prepare, but since you've gone to the trouble, I'd be happy to come with you now. Alanik has business of her own to attend to, so I'm afraid she's going to have to request an extension.
A flare of cytonic energy blasted from Quillan. A concussion bolt that sent Rinnikeen to his knees. Chapter 3. Rinnikeen knelt, looking up at Quillan, who remained in his ship. He'd been stunned by the bolt. A mind blade cut through physical material, but a concussion bolt passed right through it, bouncing around inside your skull. Quillan had surprised Rinnakeen, hit him dead on. He'd be stunned for a few minutes at least, and probably have a headache for days. Two security guards stepped up on either side of Rinnakeen, each taking him by an arm. They weren't rough with him, but they placed their hands on him firmly and hustled him into the hold of the ship. "I thought this didn't have to get aggressive," I sent to Quillan. "He was going to come with you."
"We welcome your cooperation," Quillan said.
I had to get out of here. But if they were going to hurt Rinnakeen, I was bringing him with me whether he liked it or not. I couldn't let them take him, not to give over to the superiority. I could hyperjump to him, one touch, and I could take him with me as I escaped. I reached toward the ship, past Quillan, who stared at me with a hard look on his face, into the back, where I could see the bone ridges of the top of Rinnakeen's head, where he sat sandwiched between the two guards. My mind hit a pocket of dead space. No. They had a cytonic inhibitor on board, creating a dead pocket of space behind Quillan that I couldn't reach with my powers, even though Quillan could obviously use his. Cytonic inhibitors required cooperation from multiple cytonics, but if Quillan had brought everyone, he would have surrounded the ship to keep me from escaping as well. Beyond Rinnakeen and the guards, I spotted two Dions with bright blue skin. This was superiority technology, run by those Dions because the superiority would never entrust something that powerful to a lesser species. Unity was already working with the enemy, trading away Redon's autonomy for the ability to destroy the independence.
"Alanik," Quillan said. "Step out of the ship, if you would."
He sounded so reasonable, which only made me angrier. I wasn't coming with him. I reached into the negative realm toward his mind, ready to tell him so, when I caught a bit of cytonic communication coming into his ship.
"Have them yet?"
someone asked.
"Not yet,"
Quillan responded.
"Picking them up. Getting impatient. Once humans, but we don't have them. They will have to do. We need to make the offer before."
I paused, my hands on the altitude control. Quillan's ship hovered over my wing, but if I engaged my boosters, I could shoot out from under his wing and then ascend. I'd flown with Quillan in the junior leagues. I knew I was a better pilot. But what was that? The council was getting impatient. They didn't have any harbored humans to turn over, so instead they were going to make an offer. What were they offering? Rinnakeen and me? I wasn't going to be their next bargaining piece. But Rinnakeen, they were going to give up the leader of the anti-superiority movement as an offering to appease them. "You're going to give us to them?" I asked Quillan.
"Your cooperation is appreciated,"
Quillan said. This wasn't happening. I couldn't hyperjump in there. I couldn't save Rinnakeen. The only thing I could do was run. I twisted the dial that fired the boosters. The ship roared to life, but it only jerked forward a few inches. I twisted around to look and found that Quillan had used a light hook to hold my ship in place. He climbed out of his ship, walking with a brisk step. He might want to convince me that he came in peace, but he also didn't want to give me time to escape. As long as I didn't let him get me in the back of that ship, he couldn't keep me here.
"Alanik,"
Quillan called. He was no longer speaking to me cytonically, possibly trying to distract me from anything else I might hear.
"Come with us, and we can get this all worked out."
He slowed as he approached the door to the ship. I was going to have to leave this ship behind, but I might be able to get a new one at Hollow. I reached through the negative realm, forming the coordinates for the base on Hollow in my mind. If that base was the last holdout, I could take shelter there while I made contact with the humans. I'd also be better positioned to get my people out if things went wrong.
"I'm sorry, Alanik," Quillan said. "I thought you might still see reason."
He sent a concussion bolt flying into the ship, I felt it coming and ducked just in time, missing most of it, though my ears rang and my vision swam. I ripped into the negative realm, hanging there for a gut-dropping moment, staring out at thousands of white eyes that all focused on me. I felt lost here, as I always did, slack and untethered, like a streamer torn free of its post, floating for a moment before fluttering inevitably downward into the dark. The eyes regarded me as a trespasser. And then I returned to myself. I stood in a vestibule in the Independence Base on Hollow, a tree even larger than industry, though far less populated. This tree was dead and was now used mostly for lumber harvesting. Through the enormous window comprising one wall of the vestibule, I could see Wandering Leaf, an abandoned military platform similar to the ones that had shot me down when I first visited the human planet, drifting in the miasma. The platform was slowly migrating closer to Hollow, though if it had to threaten any of our trees with its auto turrets, at least it was a sparsely populated one. The base around me was silent, the hallways empty. That was odd. There were usually 100 people in residence here, helping with the lumber transportation, keeping an eye on Wandering Leaf, and monitoring the tree itself for signs that it was becoming unstable.
"Secure the area,"
a voice said at the end of the hall, and I pivoted to see several people approaching. They were wearing Unity pilot uniforms, yellow leaves emblazoned on their shoulders. They'd already taken the base. So where were the Independence pilots? I ducked back into the corner, hiding in a recess until the Unity pilots had passed me by. Motion through the window caught my eye. I looked down to see a Unity ship hovering just under the branch, outside the base's landing bay. It would be dangerous to hyperjump again so soon, especially if I wanted to bring my brother or some of the other Independence pilots with me when I jumped out again. I'd never done so many so close together before. The more times I hyperjumped in quick succession, the more I would draw the attention of the eyes. Being a teleporter was considered one of the most hazardous of the psionic skills, because we traveled physically through the negative realm. We didn't always come back, but the risk would be worth it if I could get us all to safety. But when I reached into the negative realm, the surface of that ship felt smooth and impenetrable, blank, like the inside of the ship that had taken Rinnakeen. Another superiority inhibitor. Unity wasn't going to turn us all over, were they?
"Alanique,"
Quillan said in my mind. He'd found me again, though he was still near industry, and he couldn't hyperjump after me.
"Come back so we can discuss this."
So they could capture me was more like it. Rinnakeen was right. We needed allies who knew how to fight. If I could convince the humans to side with us instead of the superiority, maybe we could remind my people of our heritage of resistance, remind them of what we were capable of. I reached through the negative realm toward the human planet, finding Jorgen again. "I need to speak with you," I sent to his mind. "Can you give me the code to return to your planet?"
"Alanique?"
Jorgen said. "Yes," I answered. "I would like to return to speak with you, though I need the code to your inhibitor."
"Our what?"
I closed my eyes. He didn't even know he had the code. Those leaves were the same color as the ones I'd seen when I met him. Boots marched down the hallway toward me. I might be able to hide here a bit longer.
"Alanique,"
Quillan said.
"You're not going to find any friends on Hollow today."
I took a deep breath. Quillan knew where I was. He could easily send a hypercommunication to the Unity officials here. They'd be looking for me. I reached into the negative realm, and sure enough, I could hear his chatter.
"Catch her,"
Quillan was saying.
"Convince the superiority. Worth more than all of them combined."
I shook my head. Quillan and the others were trying to prove their worth to the superiority. They'd accepted aid to contain us in the form of those ships, but if they didn't do the work themselves, they wouldn't earn any favor. and I was the Rebel Cytonic, the biggest prize of all. I had to get out of here. You have a code in your mind, I sent to Jorgen. It lets you use your cytonic powers on your planet. I can't return unless you give it to me.
You used cytonics here before,
he replied. I did not have time for this. You have an inhibitor now, I said to Jorgen, and you know that code, even if you don't know that you know it.
I'm not sure how to give you that. Let me go talk to Command, see if they'll—
I'm in kind of a bind here, I said. There's no time for that. There's an impression in your mind. Try to think about allowing me to come there. Try to will it to me.
I mean, I think you're welcome to come back. I'm sure Command would like to speak with you again.
The words didn't come with an impression. They were useless to me.
Find her,
a voice said from down the hall. The impression is in there, I said to Jorgen. How do you access your cytonics? Do you have exercises?
I meditate,
Jorgen said. Try that, I said. Do it fast.
Hang on. I'm trying.
I could feel Jorgen's cytonic resonance growing stronger as he deepened his connection with the negative realm. He was welcoming me into his mind, giving me access to his deeper thoughts. More footsteps. One of the Unity pilots turned a corner, stepping into view.
Alanik,
Jorgen said.
Is it working?
I reached into his mind as he reached into mine. There. An impression, like a cytonic key. I copied it, embedding it in my own thoughts, and reached toward the human planet, which took shape again, feeling solid, accessible. I focused on that place, forming the coordinates. The Unity pilot's bright eyes fixed on me.
She's here,
he said. Quillan's voice filled my mind.
This is a mistake, Alanik, he said. You can't run from us forever.
We're going to find out, I said. And then I pulled myself into the negative realm and left my people behind. Chapter 4. When I emerged from the negative realm, escaping from the ire of the eyes, I stood in the infirmary room I'd fled when I left the humans. It was empty, the overhead lights turned off. The first time I'd hyperjumped to Detritus, I'd been shot down by the automatic weapons that guarded their planet. My wounds had mostly healed while they kept me unconscious here. Not that I was inclined to thank them for keeping me in a coma. I was still technically supposed to be taking it easy and felt twinges in my abdomen if I overdid it. Thankfully, hyperjumping wasn't physically strenuous. I pressed my back against the wall by the window so I wouldn't be visible from the hall, then reached out trying to find Jorgen. The building around me buzzed with a surprising amount of cytonic energy. At first, I wondered if the humans had far more cytonics among them than I'd previously supposed. But no, these minds felt different, their energy more subtle, like the difference between a large fruit and a tiny seed. Potential cytonics, perhaps? If the humans had this many, they'd be formidable allies indeed. I found Jorgen's mind, with two of the smaller resonances hovering near him. I made it, I said. Thank you for your help.
Oh, good, he said. I lost track of you, and I thought maybe something bad had happened.
Several bad things, in fact. I need to talk to you, I said. Can you come alone? He'd wanted to alert his commanders to my presence, and maybe he already had, but I wasn't eager to speak with them again until I had someone on my side, given how poorly things had gone last time.
Where are you?
He couldn't locate me then. That wasn't a surprise. He was untrained, and of all the cytonics on Redon, I was by far the best at picking out locations and individual cytonics in the negative realm. I sent him a picture of the infirmary room. Jorgen paused.
Can I bring FM?
That human woman. I'd liked her. Yes, but only her.
On my way,
Jorgen answered. I wished I'd been able to choose some place with more space, where I might be able to get a look at the humans before they found me. But I had the key to their inhibitor now, so they wouldn't be able to stop me from leaving again if it came to that. But if I left, I'd be no better off, with no way to help retake our base and no leverage to inspire the rest of the Independence military to do the same. I tracked Jorgen as he moved through the building, first away from me and then closer. The door to the infirmary opened, and Jorgen and FM stepped in, shutting the door behind them. FM's hair was lighter, similar to an Urdale's, though it had an odd golden quality to it, while Jorgen's was dark and tightly curled. The cuts on his face were almost healed, the bandages gone. FM drew a curtain across the window, and they left the lights off. They weren't any more eager to be caught by their commanders than I was. Alanik, FM said. She had one of the translation pins they'd found in my ship, though it barely changed the sound of my name. I spoke fluent Mandarin, which was a human language still in use on Redon, but these humans spoke English, and I only knew a few words of that one. You came back? We didn't think you would. FM smiled. Her face looked so strange, all naked skin with no protrusions, like the bone ridges had been filed off. It's good to see you again. How are you feeling? It took me a moment to realize she was referencing my injuries. Last time she'd seen me, I'd been in a hospital bed. I'm well, I said. And you?
We're fine, Jorgen said. We're glad you're back, but what are you doing here?
Straight to the point, then. I liked that, but it was the opposite of what my espionage trainer, Finis, had taught me before I'd left for Starsight. Many species were suspicious of direct requests. They saw them as too aggressive. I wasn't much of a spy, but I was the only Cytonic who could answer the summons by hyperjumping in my own ship and have the chance to hyperjump back out again if things went wrong. I'd failed, and these humans had succeeded in my place. If they wanted to be aggressive, that was fine by me, but I hadn't forgotten everything Finis had taught me. I need help, I said, and I'd like to offer assistance in return. Your people are in a poor position with the superiority.
That's an understatement,
Jorgen said. He was about to go on when two brightly colored animals appeared on his shoulders, slug-like creatures with bulbous heads and spines running down their backs. One was yellow with blue spines and the other red with black stripes, and both emitted one of the smaller cytonic resonances I'd felt before. Had those animals just hyperjumped? Jorgen, the yellow one said. I took a step back into the corner. They also talked.
Hi, Snuggles,
Jorgen said. The pin translated Snuggles as a cuddling action, but the slug looked too spiky to cuddle with to me. Jorgen shot an irritated glance at FM.
I thought you were working on that stay command.
We're working on it, FM said. Gil is getting pretty good, but—
Gil,
the yellow slug said, and then it disappeared and reappeared again on the floor by FM's feet, with a second yellow and blue slug in tow, this one with blue markings framing its head.
Yes,
Jorgen said.
I see that Gil is great at it.
To be fair, FM said, that wasn't his fault.
Gil,
Snuggles said triumphantly. Jorgen sighed, and FM pulled a fabric sling out of her pocket, wrapping it over her shoulder. She picked up the slug from the floor and tucked it into the pouch, petting it on its spines. I stared at them all. What is that? I asked.
It's a Tanix, FM said.
The creature leaned toward me out of the sling. Its body was long and thin, like the wood leeches that sometimes infested the bark of the trees back home. I was familiar with several alien species, but not one that looked like this. Are they intelligent? I asked.
Yes,
FM said.
Sort of,
Jorgen corrected her.
Not as intelligent as humans, FM allowed. They don't actually talk. They repeat things we say.
Things we say, Gil said.
Yes, like that, FM said. Thanks, Gil.
And they hyperjump, I said. Jorgen closed his eyes.
Yes. So much for not revealing all of our secrets immediately. Thanks a lot, Snuggles.
Snuggles,
Gil repeated. This was officially the strangest meeting I'd ever had, but at least I'd already learned something. The creatures are cytonic, I said. I can feel them in my mind.
Yes,
Jorgen said. He peered around the side of the curtain, like he was afraid we would be overheard.
But don't try to communicate with this one.
He indicated the one riding on his shoulder. This Tanix was red with black stripes down its sides and black spines running down the center of its back.
He's temperamental. I can't go through that again.
Again,
the red slug said. Its voice was deeper than the others and somehow more disconcerting.
But you're not here to talk about slugs,
FM said.
You said you needed help? I'm surprised you'd come to us after the way you were treated last time.
I don't want to judge your whole people by the actions of a few, I said carefully. I would not like it if you judged my people by the actions of some that I know. FM smiled.
I'm glad you feel that way.
They both watched me expectantly. We'd certainly been through the small talk portion of the conversation that Finis recommended, even if we'd been talking about teleporting slugs, which was certainly not part of my espionage primer. Some of my people have decided to align themselves with our common enemy, I said. I think both our peoples could benefit from an alliance. FM and Jorgen looked at each other.
I agree, Jorgen said carefully. But I don't have the authority to make one.
I'd been too aggressive. Maybe humans were more like the peoples Finis had prepared me to address. But you are a cytonic, I said. Surely you have some sway in what your leaders decide. Jorgen and FM exchanged another glance.
Is that what it's like on your planet?
Jorgen asked.
The cytonics are in charge.
Not in charge, I said. The Unity leaders weren't cytonic, and neither was Rinnakeen, though he was the highest-ranked independence official. But we are respected for our powers. The Unity leaders respected the cytonics who sided with them, at least.
Things are different here,
Jorgen said.
Our people are afraid of cytonics. The superiority has used them against us in the past.
Of course they would, if given the opportunity. So you see that the superiority are not to be trusted.
Yes, FM said. We've been fighting them for years. You said you were afraid we would trust them, but they haven't even offered us peace. We are looking for allies, though. And there's a former superiority minister in residence here who...
They are here? I asked. The superiority sent representatives to Redon, of course, under the guise of checking on our progress as a people. They were like squirrel keepers, checking the cages. They never came too close in case we would bite.
Kuna isn't in good standing with the superiority, FM said quickly. The superiority tried to kill them, and we rescued them. We're not looking to join the superiority, Alanik, and we do need allies against them.
That was good. If this Kuna had turned against the superiority, they might have information my people could use. Is Kuna cytonic?
No,
Jorgen said.
Aside from Spensa, we only have two cytonics. Spensa's grandmother and myself.
That was important information, and he probably shouldn't have given it up so easily. I needed to keep them talking, see what else I might learn. If they decided not to send help, at least I'd be armed with more information. At least this was going much better than our last conversation, when that angry woman threatened to keep me as a prisoner. Spensa still hasn't returned from Starsight, I asked. Jorgen took a deep breath.
She did,
but she's gone again.
How did she go there without drawing attention to herself? I asked. She sent a message to my people saying she was pretending to be me, but her ruse should have been discovered immediately. How was she able to disguise herself? I'd been in shock and in pain when I'd given Spencer the coordinates. I'd never been clear on the details of how she'd managed to use them.
We had a ship with advanced holographic technology,
Jorgen said.
Technology even the Superiority doesn't have. Spencer was able to use a hologram to make herself look like you.
That is clever. A resource like that could be used to walk right onto the council tree and break Rinnakeen out without the use of cytonics.
It was,
Jorgen said.
But the ship didn't make it back from Starsight. We can't use that trick anymore.
Another broken branch. What are you hoping to gain from an alliance with us? FM asked. I set my shoulders. This was the opening Phineas had taught me to look for, a direct inquiry to my intentions, an invitation to announce what I needed. Time to get to the point, to beg them to send a military force back with me. Quillan wanted to capture me first, but he wouldn't wait forever before he transported the rest of the resistance to the Superiority. I didn't know what they would do with us. I also didn't want to find out. Your people know very little about cytonics, I said. I don't know everything, but I could offer more instruction than you have now. As for what I need, the Superiority already believes that my people are working with yours, because Spencer was discovered to be a human disguised as an Urdale. They've demanded we turn in our human co-conspirators, but of course we have none. So instead, our government wants to turn me and other resistance members over to them instead.
They're going to turn over their cytonics to the Superiority?
FM asked.
That seems unwise.
They've already captured our faction's High Chancellor, who champions independence for Redon. By turning him over to the Superiority, those who seek for unification will find themselves unopposed.
They're trying to use the Superiority to take out their political enemies,
Jorgen said.
Because that can't go wrong.
FM shook her head. Two birds with one stone, the saying goes. The pin didn't have a direct translation for that first part. What's a bird? I asked.
A flying animal,
FM said.
We don't really have them anymore. They were a thing from Earth. You don't have birds on Redon?
We don't have creatures that fly, I said. Anything that strays too far from the trees without an atmospheric generator will choke on the miasma. Both Jorgen and FM blinked at me. They clearly had no idea what I was talking about, but it was also beside the point. As for what I hope to gain, I'm hoping that your people would be willing to help me defend mine against the Superiority.
We can't promise you anything,
Jorgen said.
But if you'll come with us to talk to our admiral.
Is this the woman who tried to interrogate me? I asked. I'd hoped to avoid involving her.
You've met Admiral Cobb, but he didn't get to say much,
FM said.
He's much more reasonable than Jeshua Waite, the woman you ran from. But yes, she will probably be there. Especially if you want to meet with Minister Kuna.
I doubted Jeshua Waite was going to want to work with me. I knew her type, always reaching for power, never wanting to extend any in return. And if your leaders refuse an alliance? I asked. Jorgen and FM exchanged another look.
There's nothing we can do for you without their permission. That's not the way it works here.
Here!
Chimed the red slug on Jorgen's shoulder.
Not now, Boom Slug,
Jorgen said.
Boom Slug,
sang both yellow slugs, and they hyperjumped onto Jorgen's shoulders with the red slug. All three slid off and rolled onto the ground at his feet. The pin translated Boom Slug to mean a mollusk that explodes. That was ominous. Jorgen shook his head.
We really need to get them to only do that when they're given the code word.
Rig and I are working on it, FM said. But I think they like each other more than they like caviar, so it's slow going.
I had no idea what that meant, but I didn't think these two were going to help me unless I spoke to their leaders. At least this time I was in a better position. They knew I wasn't their prisoner, and an alliance would benefit us all. I'd come this far. I wasn't going to go home without trying everything. All right, I said. I will speak with your admiral.
Good,
Jorgen said.
I really think we can all benefit from working together. I could use some coaching in cytonics if you haven't noticed.
I noticed, I said. All cytonics had slightly different capabilities, but I could show him the basics at least. At some point, we all had to figure out the nuances of our powers on our own.
So that's settled then, FM said. I can wait here with you while Jorgen sets up a meeting, if you want.
Please, I said. And Jorgen returned Gil to FM before leaving to talk to his leaders. I hoped my meeting with them went better this time, because otherwise, I had come a very long way for nothing. Chapter 5. It didn't take long for Jorgen's admiral to agree to a meeting. FM and her strange slug kept me company in the infirmary while we waited for Jorgen to send word that they were ready for us. What are you doing with the Tanix anyway? I asked her.
Bonding, FM said. I shouldn't say too much, but it's a new program the pilots are trying out.
The pilots were bonding with creatures that could hyperjump. After one of their own had infiltrated the superiority in my place, trying to find the secret to hyperdrives. The humans, as it turned out, had found it. You can use them to hyperjump, I guessed, even if you aren't cytonic. FM winced.
I really don't have the clearance to tell you that.
You didn't tell me, I said. Your slugs revealed it.
Yeah, we really do need to figure out how to get them to only do that on command. It gets really confusing when they want to buddy up every time we mention their names.
I stared at the Tanix, which was tucked back in FM's sling, nuzzling the crook of her elbow. If those things were the key to superiority hyperdrives, I would need to take at least one with me if I had to flee. A radio attached to FM's belt made a beeping noise, and then Jorgen's voice spoke.
We're ready,
he said.
FM, can you bring Alanique to the command room?
We're on our way,
FM said, and she smiled at me in a way that was probably meant to be reassuring. FM led me through the squat metal command block. My body felt lighter, my steps bouncier than expected. The gravitational pull of detritus must have been slightly less than Redon. Everything on this platform was so flat and low, not like the buildings at home, which would wind up the branches of the trees, filled with ramps and stairs on the inside and the outside. On some of the wide lower branches, where flat, horizontal ground was easier to come by, a building might have a wide first story, but then it would soar upward, making use of the space above it, or spiral around the branches with lower floors built on the bottom side of the branches. Who wanted to live in a building that was so squashed? I felt like the ceiling was pressing down on me, closing me in. Before we reached their command room, we passed beneath a large skylight through which I could see the other platforms that traveled above. They looked a lot like wandering leaf, though there were so many more of them. Was this an outpost during the last human war? I asked. Is that how you became trapped here?
No, FM said. The technology here is a lot older. Our people were travelers with a flotilla of ships. We crashed here and were imprisoned by the superiority after the war ended.
I wondered if there were more humans hiding in pockets across the universe. The people here had been resourceful enough to survive.